Mainstream Mental Health Radio
with Dr. John Huber.
What do you think you are, crazy or something? Well, you're not.
We're on a mission from God.
News, issues revolving around mental health.
Dr. John Huber, a mental health professional for over 20 years, the chairman for Mainstream Mental Health, a clinical forensic psychologist, and a psychology professor at Texas State University. Breaking the silence of mental health, one day at a time. Discussing the human condition. Providing a sounding board for mental health issues. And making mental health mainstream.
You got a gift, my friend.
Now it's time for Mainstream Mental Health Radio.
Let the healing begin.
With Dr. John Huber. To Mainstream Mental Health Radio with your host, Dr. John Huber. Check us out on social media. Google Plus, Mainstream Mental Health. Instagram, at Mainstream Mental Health. Twitter, at Mainstream MENTL. And search for Mainstream Mental Health on Facebook. Please tune in every week to Mainstream Mental Health Radio with your host, Dr. John Huber.
You're listening to Mainstream Mental Health Radio Show. I'm your host, Dr. John Huber. And with everything going on today in this world, and especially here in Central Texas with the bomber and with just normal life processes, you know, we have to deal with grief, with the loss of a loved one, and some people have to deal with their own lives coming to an end. So we have a special guest today, Jill Johnson Young. She's a licensed clinical social worker, and she is a certified grief recovery facilitator. She's worked in hospice as a social worker, and she does extensive grief work in her own private practice. So with that, I would like to introduce Jill Johnson Young. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you for having me, and I'm glad for the people of Austin this morning that there's some relief and a sense of security once again.
Definitely, definitely a sense of we can breathe now. So,
yeah,
you know, we talked briefly before we came on the air here, and, you know, I deal with, in the hospitals I'm at, with death and dying on a regular basis. Now, as a psychologist, before I started working in hospitals, it was something that was kind of distant. I didn't necessarily have to deal with it unless somebody came in, you know, my mother died, my uncle died, I had a child who died, you know, after the fact kind of process. And it didn't happen on a regular basis. But now that I'm in the hospitals, I see it almost weekly, sometimes daily during the week when I go into the hospitals. What is it about death and dying that just kind of locks us up as human beings? And we're like, hey, I don't want to go there. Let's not talk about that.
You know, it's not something that we talk about regularly in our society. We made death sanitized a long time ago by moving it into hospitals instead of leaving it home where it used to be. And then we turned it into something that we should have, like, a system for dealing with it. And there are five stages, and then we get through that, and then it's over. And people are uncomfortable with the concept of death and dying. They want it to be fast. They want other people's grief to be over sooner because it's uncomfortable to see someone sad. It's a natural part of life. It's not something we've
yes.
made a natural part of life anymore.
Exactly. And, you know, I understand, you know, the stages of death and dying, but from a clinical standpoint, it's valuable. But unfortunately, it's kind of gotten into mainstream society, and people think, oh, you have to do this and you have to do that. And everybody's grief experience is different. And it's hard to understand that. I've worked with families, and one person is actually very happy and excited that the person's struggle is over. And then other people in the family are irate. And how can you be happy? You know, grandma just passed away. And, you know, everybody's experience is different.
Everybody's loss is different, even if the same person died for all of them. Their relationship to that
yes.
person is very different. And, you know, it's not like Hallmark. When someone's dying in a family, the family typically behaves sort of an exacerbated way of how they typically behave. I've seen families over a hospital bed throwing pots and pans at each other. And yes. That's because that's how they lived real life. And so you have to be prepared for that. And there are going to be those who are okay with it. And there are those who are going to not even want to step foot in the house, because that might mean that they have to look at death as a reality.
And, you know, I've seen people in the hospital rooms who are dying, and their family shows up, and now there's 10 or 12 people all sitting along the wall, and not one person will get up and hold the dying grandmother's hand. You know,
they need to
and be encouraged.
They need to be taught. Right.
Oh, yeah. They do. They do. That is so true. And it's hard, though. It's hard because we don't, like you said before, we've sanitized it. And one of the things I work with, you know, your experience as a hospice person is that, you know, taking that family member back home where they're back, where they're loved and where their whole life has been is so valuable. And it's almost like when we mention that, the families get irate. What are you telling us? You know, we don't want her or him to die in our house.
There's a real concern. In some cultures, it's not okay to have someone die in the house. And in others,
exactly.
It's expected. I prefer it. Of course, I have a hospice bit. That's what I did for a very long time. I've also lost two spouses, and both have died here at home. And that was
wow.
Way more comfortable. We could be in our jammies, and we had
exactly.
Friends and family over, and they could die the way they chose. One wanted to be out in the living room with everybody. One, it was a more difficult death because it was Lewy body dementia. That was upstairs, but people
wow.
Came and stayed the night with me. So, you know, you are more. I'm more comfortable at home, but some people need that hospital support. We also need the education
yes.
About these are what the stages of death look like, not in terms of the emotional stages, but this is what happens to a body when someone is dying, so that you're prepared for it, because it can be scary to watch someone in the final stages if you don't know that it's natural and normal and that they're not hurting and that
exactly.
This is absolutely how it happens. It also helps if families have had that conversation ahead of time, because then they know what their loved one wants. If you don't have that conversation way before the end of the illness, then there's going to typically be somebody who's unhappy with not having a feeding tube or with using morphine or something, because they haven't been educated and because their loved one hasn't told them what they want.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, you know, you've written books on this topic. What, you know, we kind of see the motivation, but what was your process? I mean, how did you decide to write the books the way you did?
The big book that's currently out with the editor, and I'm hoping will be out next month, is actually a collection of all the blogs I wrote while both of them were
uh-huh.
ill and dying. And I did that
wow.
as a way of communicating, so that I didn't have to be on the phone and on email all day long, and so that people would understand that this was a reality. Because it's frequent that people will look at someone who's terminally ill, and this is a real issue for folks who are ill, and say, oh, you look so good. You can't be dying. You can't be that sick.
Right.
You look good.
Right.
And the reality is they are that sick, and they are dying, and now you're putting pressure on them to feel better than they are. And to fake
right.
feeling better. And so I would write blogs about, you know, it's really hard today. There's not enough energy. We had a good day yesterday, so today is a rest day. Or in the case of my second spouse, you know, we were up all night because we had NCIS in the bedroom upstairs chasing bad guys. And I'm
right.
off to work today, but if anyone wants to stop by, that'd be handy. And it gave them an understanding of what was really happening. I sent out rules in some of those blogs. If you come over, you can have this
right.
much time, because otherwise they're going to wear out. My first spouse
right.
died of pulmonary fibrosis, so there wasn't a lot of oxygen to be used, and we
no.
were pumping it most of them in. So if you're going to come visit, great. We would really like that, but you need to be prepared for a limited visit, because that's all that can be handled. So it was educational, and as I sent them out, people started responding, people I didn't know, saying,
mm-hmm.
I had no idea. No one told me this stuff. And then in the grief process, I wrote some more about that. And then I ultimately remarried my second spouse, who was the hospice nurse for my first spouse, who asked my second spouse to come back and find me afterward. And that was
uh-huh.
kind of a unique experience for most people, so I included that. And it just
uh-huh.
seemed like it was a way to help people understand that you don't have five stages, and you go right through them, and everything's fine. And then as a hospice worker, you know, and then as a hospice worker, I would hear things like, well, it's been a month. Why aren't they better yet? And we don't have an understanding that it takes a while. I heard an interview after the bombing and shooting in London last year, I believe it was. There's been so many. And a newscaster said, you know, I'm interviewing someone from the band today, and they're still sad. It's been a week already. I wanted to throw a shoe at the television.
It's been a week, so.
It's been a week, really? 40 people were slaughtered in front of me. I just wanted to normalize grief and to say you can do this your own way, and it can be as fast or as slow as you need to, but you can recover from it. You don't have to sit in it. You can take it. You can take them with you, but you don't have to stay in grief.
Right.
So that was the reason. The other books, one's a workbook for people to work through it, and one is a kid's book that I'm finishing up now that talks about someone who's dying and the child's experience at a child's perspective. And it's got some educational back for parents. Yeah, because we don't know how to talk to someone's dying. It makes everyone a little
weird.
We
don't. And we can't talk to them about sex. Forget about dying.
And then
also
pretend that it ran away.
Exactly. So it also sounds like in some ways that what you did was also writing that book was also very therapeutic for you. I mean, I could hear it in your voice. So
yeah, absolutely.
How did you benefit from that? Because I actually encourage a lot of my families and stuff that are doing it to write a diary or a blog to help them process it. I'm not one of those diary kind of people, but I like to write down key phrases or words because that brings me back to where I was. Does that make sense?
It does. I encourage any kind of writing or art medium that someone can use to express what's going on and then to give them a chance to revisit later. I found the blogs were helpful because I was so tired that I forgot some of the stuff that occurred. And had I not written it down and done the blog, I would never remember a lot of those incidents. And some of them were very loving, and some were very funny, and some were a little chaotic. And it was therapeutic to write it down. It was also helpful because it really did back people off who wanted to tell me how we could use this miracle potion or this miracle machine, and everything's going to be better because I gnash my teeth when that happens.
It was
helpful in that. It was helpful in the moment, and it's helpful afterwards.
That is so great. Well, how can my listeners find you if they want to talk with you, maybe have you come present, or even how can they find your books?
They can find it at yourpaththroughgrief.com, which is our website, and it's also I've got a Facebook page that I'm on frequently because, you know, Facebook. And my direct email is on there. There's also a contact page in there. The workbook's on there. There's a public page on there for therapists who might need some tips on how to talk to someone who's dying or how to do grief work better. And there's a blog on it so people can kind of catch up with things. My goal
that's
is
awesome.
To make grief more accessible.
That.
You're welcome.
Well, and that's what we try to do at Mainstream Mental Health, and this is part of mental health, understanding that this is natural. And, you know, you're probably like me, too, because of what you do. Whenever somebody close to you, a family member or something like that, is experiencing that or having a loved one is passing, it's oftentimes, you know, I get phone calls, tell me what to do.
1-800-CALL-JILL.
Exactly.
Uh-huh. The best part is when you're a social worker, they want to know, but then they don't do it typically.
Family, you know,
right.
And they didn't pay you for it. If they paid you for it, they, man, I spent this money. I better do this.
I better do it. Right, exactly. So others will come to me, and I'll give them the same advice, and then it gets spread out that way. So, yeah, I wanted people to talk. I want people to talk about death and dying. I'm married to the mortician, actually, now, who took care of both of my previous spouses. So we're sort of the couple that does death day and night. And it's better for us if we can talk about it. When our kids pets died, we have burial services, and my backyard and front yard are currently occupied. Because you got to make it natural, and people have to know how to talk about this stuff from the time they're tiny.
Well, they've got to. They've got to. Well, I really appreciate you coming on.
Good. Thank you for having me.
It is good. Well, thank you. And, you know, I'd like to leave you open to maybe having you on in the future, and I appreciate you coming on. And, again, they are all, you know, glad that you gave your passthroughgrief.com because now they have an access to you, and I know a lot of people need experts like you and I. So thank you very much. And
you're very welcome.
Any last words before we wrap this up?
Just in terms of what's going on in Austin right now, everybody take deep breaths and take care of each other and give yourself a little extra space. You've had a really stressful, terrible couple of weeks, and it takes a while to kind of get back to normal, and it's a new normal. So take your breaths and take care of each other and appreciate who you've got with you. And please feel free to be in touch with me.
Thank you very much. Well, that concludes our interview, and I want to thank Jill Johnson-Young, Certified Grief Recovery Facilitator, for coming on the show today, and remind everybody to follow us on mainstreammentalhealth.org, listen to us on the Mental Health News Radio Network, and remember, life is what happens while you're making plans, so buckle up.
Thanks for listening to Mainstream Mental Health Radio with your host, Dr. John Huber. Check us out on social media, Google+, Mainstream Mental Health, Instagram at Mainstream Mental Health, Twitter at Mainstream MENTL, and search for Mainstream Mental Health on Facebook. Please tune in every week to Mainstream Mental Health Radio with your host, Dr. John Huber.
It costs us nothing.